For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Martin McCloskey on fire. This is Mark McCloskey on fire on Newstalk STL.
I get knocked out, but I get up again. You're never gonna keep me down. I get knocked out, but I get up again. You're never gonna keep me down.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark McCloskey. Mark McCloskey on fire, Newstalk STL 101.9, 94.1. You can catch me on X, formerly known as Twitter, on my Facebook feed, on Rumble, any place you get your podcast. Well, you know, ladies and gentlemen, it's a dangerous world out there these days. Crime's rampant and the government's ignoring it. We have this thing called the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment protects our rights to defend ourselves. And, you know, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And did I mention hunting in there or Bambi and Kevlar like the idiot in chief always talks about? Nope, the purpose of the First Amendment is to keep the federal government from having a monopoly on coercive force. Well, we happen to have a young man here with us today who I tried to kill with COVID a couple of years ago, who owns a company with his brother called Sons of Liberty Gunworks down in San Antonio, Texas. His name's Mike Mahalski, and welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, it's good to see you, Mark.
Yeah, I see you survived the last time we were down in Texas together. I always had a raging COVID infection, and I think you were the first guy to mention, hey, you know, I think you might be sick.
Yeah, I don't know if it was the COVID that was scary or the cartel place that we stopped when we were toward the border.
Oh, God. You know, I don't have a picture of that I've got to load up here today, but I remember that. What we're talking about was we'd gone to visit the border, and at some point there's this place right on the other side of the border where the United States government gives clothing to the illegal aliens that cross the border, and it was manned by the meanest-looking thugs I've ever seen in my life. I mean, you can see Mike here. He's kind of a robust guy. We've got an M4 machine gun in the front of the truck, and we were a little intimidated just to go over and take pictures of these guys. Is that right, Mike?
I mean, it was warehouses full of, bundled clothing. It looked industrial, you know, and it was guarded. It was overly guarded for some clothing.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself and your operation down there and what you do for a living.
So we're rifle manufacturers. We're based out of San Antonio, Texas. We're probably the fastest growing rifle company in our space in terms of like defensive weapons. We service the civilian market. We have government contracts. We do some DOD work. Foreign sales, but our primary focus is the American commercial market. We want to supply Americans, the American citizen, with the same type of firepower that, you know, a government entity would use, to protect themselves. I think the American citizen deserves the same level of protection.
Yeah. And I'm going to have up here, you won't be able to see it, but I'm going to put up a picture of you and me and Patty when we were down there. And you had provided us with a couple of really fine firearms, which we're proud to still own and use. Tell us a little bit about how people can get in touch with you.
So if we're not still shadow banned on Instagram, it's Sons of Liberty GW. SOLGW.com is our website. And then, of course, Sons of Liberty Gunworks on Facebook. Unfortunately, we're hard to search for because we're a gun company. And unless you enter our name exactly correct, you know, in social media, you're not going to find us. And that's by design. And unfortunately, every time we get closer to an election year, our microphones get turned down all the way. You know, sometimes we have a pretty good flow. And then when there's a hot gun topic in the media, a high profile gun incident in the media, or you're getting close to an election, we get squelched quite a bit. But I'm sure you're very familiar with that.
You wouldn't be inferring that our illustrious government, in cahoots with social media corporations, actually tries to suppress or infringe on those Second Amendment rights, would you?
Unfortunately, that's the tip of the iceberg. I mean, you know, elections have consequences. This administration, banking, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Chase, they will not work with a gun company. We can't send invoices through QuickBooks. We can't use Shopify. A lot of credit card transactions are flagged. PayPal, so many different financial services that are not available to the gun industry. I mean, we're a constitutionally protected, legally regulated industry that, and we do not have access to normal banking or financial services. It's hard to do business that way. My fear for the future of gun ownership in the Second Amendment is probably not through legislation, because I don't think gun control has ever been less popular than it is today. But with private industry working with the government, that's the stuff that scares me. Insurance companies, we're part of some frivolous litigation right now. That's the stuff that keeps me up at night, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you don't have a constitutional right to buy tennis shoes. You don't have a constitutional right to go to the movies, but you do have a constitutional right to own and bear a gun. And yet it is the corporate sector. It is the woke, big corporate entities that are doing everything they can to disarm the population. And now that we know that the federal government, the Department of Justice, and the FBI are actively conspiring with social media companies to suppress freedom, the good news for your business and the good news for those of us out there that believe in liberty and our republic is that the more the government does that, probably the better your sales get, right?
There is a correlation. And I will tell you, over the last 3 years, I do a lot of advocacy for the Second Amendment. I'm out there all the time, whether it's on the news or podcast, things like this. Nothing I could have done on my own has inspired more gun ownership than the policies of the last couple of years. With COVID lockdowns, the strong arm of that kind of tyranny, the civil unrest that you've seen in cities with the defunding of police, the rise of crime, the demographics of gun ownership have changed forever simply by citizens responding to the conditions around them. When crime is going through the roof in your city, and the police have been defunded, well, your inclination is to go out and buy a gun. Gun ownership is higher than it's ever been. The demographics of what if you were to draw a caricature of what you thought a gun owner looked like, it's considerably different than it was 5 years ago. And it has a lot to do with people reacting to the condition of the country.
Yeah. And when you've got the Department of Justice, for example, declaring that the greatest threat to our republic, it's not Red China, it's not Russia, it's not Arab terrorism, it's white nationalism. When you've got the federal government telling us that God-fearing, constitutional-following American citizens are the greatest threat to our freedom, you can understand why people might want to have an ability to defend themselves against that government.
Yeah, I mean, there was an FBI memo or a Department of Justice memo that had circulated depicting, warning signs of what domestic terrorism looked like. And it was things like the Gadsden flag. It was imagery from the founding, or mentions of the founders mentions of the Constitution. I mean, if you look at the Constitution as a, guiding principle and document, that is evidence of your extremism.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's bizarre.
and of course, the converse of that is you have to recognize the fact that the people that would take the position that the Constitution is a radical document threatening our, quote, democracy, unquote, you got to realize that the people that say that are the people that wish to take away any ability of the people to actually defend themselves, defend their freedom, and continue an independent republic. Well, one other thing I want to touch on, I got a flash a picture up here of you and me in front of a courthouse up in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And, you know, some people, you know, talk a good game, but you actually took the effort to go out of your way to come up and be with us and watch the wait on the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict. And I got a picture up of you and me in front of the courthouse at the moment that the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict came down. How did that make you feel when that jury decided in favor of Kyle?
It restored my hope a little bit, you know, because that was not a Kyle Rittenhouse wasn't on trial there. The right to self-defense was on trial. You know, the I think the Second Amendment was on trial. If you remember the prosecutor in that case, you know, the evidence of Rittenhouse's crime was he used the type of weapon that was used. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, the type of rifle that you could use was on trial. And so that acquittal, I think, was huge. It reaffirms the natural right to self-defense. And, you know, what was interesting to me, and I we talked about this at the time, they had bungled that. The prosecution had bungled it so bad. And I don't think there's ever been a crime that has been, or I don't think there's ever been a high-profile incident that has been so well documented from before, during, and after the incident. So where it was, I thought it was a fairly open and shut deal. After that verdict, I was expecting there to be a lot more trouble in the town of Kenosha.
Yeah.
But there really wasn't. And I think there wasn't was because the media probably thought they were about to get sued rightfully for all of the, you know, erroneous stuff that they had accused that guy of being a white supremacist and, you know, committing other crimes. The media did not inflame the public. There was no riot after that verdict because there was no instigation of a riot on behalf of the media.
Yeah. And they'd already, you know, when it turned out that one of the news media outlets was following the jury van trying to dox the jury. I mean, they got taken down. I love the judge in that case. And I agree with you. It reaffirmed my faith in the basic tenets of our country. Here are jurors that heard that the protesters outside all day long, 8 hours a day on the steps of the courthouse. If they don't get it right, we're going to burn it down. They had to make a decision based on the law and based on the facts, even if it meant there was going to be another riot in Kenosha. And by God, they had the strength of character to do it. And it really renews your faith in your fellow man.
No, it does, and they stood up to a ton of political pressure and a ton of media pressure. But, I mean, like I said, that case was – I mean, I don't think there was a single second of the incident that wasn't captured on multiple cameras from the FBI drones. That remember the FBI withheld a lot of the drone footage? I mean, that was a bombshell, you know? So it was very well documented, and the prosecution really had no case, and then – and the prosecutor was quite inept. I mean, you're a pretty good attorney, Mark. What'd you think?
Oh, God. You know, it was, and then the point when he picks up the rifle and starts flagging the jury with it.
That is not how to win friends, you know?
Well, you know, but the problem is that the left never gives up. I call your attention to Daniel Perry there in Austin, who's going to get, you know, he's been convicted of murder for defending himself against a BLM rioter that leveled an AK-47 at him. And the government, the powers that be that want to disarm us will never get up. They give up. They're doing everything they can to criminalize self-defense and legalize crime. And we have to fight back against it every single day.
It looks like now I have not heard the final resolution on this, but it looks like Abbott might pardon this guy.
I sure hope he does.
And the Austin Police Department never wanted to bring charges. It was the Austin District Attorney, a Soros-funded DA, that kind of went against the recommendations of police who investigated the crime, or not the crime, but the incident, rather.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no, it's sometimes you feel that we're no longer a nation of law. We are a nation of political will.
Yeah.
And there was some political will to string this guy up. And I'm hoping that there's some political will to pardon him for his sake. But it's sad that it has to come down to that.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time, Mike. But give in 10 seconds, tell the folks once again how to get a hold of you and obtain your fine products.
SOLGW.com is our website. And then if you can find us on social media, it's Sons of Liberty GW. And we're here to supply the American citizen with high-quality defensive rifles.
All right. Well, thank you very much. That's Michael Michalski, Sons of Liberty Gunworks, San Antonio, Texas. Thanks again for being on the show, Mike.
Good to see you, Mark.
All right, that was Mike Michalski, Sons of Liberty Gunworks, San Antonio, Texas, a true American patriot and a guy who's out there to make sure that when the government comes knocking on your door, that if they want to take your rights away, they're going to have to pull it from your cold, dead hands. We'll be right back and talk about the conflict between rural Republicans and rhinos and what happens when you stand up against the tide.
Get more Mark McCloskey at NewstalkSTL.com. More Mark McCloskey on Fire coming up on Newstalk STL. For podcast articles and more, find us on NewstalkSTL.com. Mark McCloskey on Fire. You're listening to Mark McCloskey on Fire on Newstalk STL.
All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark McCloskey, News Talk STL. Mark McCloskey on Fire, 101.9, 94.1. Well, you know, here in the state of Missouri, we have super majorities in both houses, in both the Senate and the House of Representatives. We're a big red state. We got a Republican governor, a Republican lieutenant governor, a Republican attorney general, Republican secretary of state. And yet all we do is do big blue things. And what's the reason? The reason is that although people run as Republicans, they're really Democrats. And so what we're trying to do here in Missouri is something called vetting. We've got a program set up where we're going to require people, if they're going to run as Republicans, they have to verify that they'll support the Republican platform and that they qualify and have Republican policies and Republican principles. And in response to that, the state party is giving us tremendous flack. The House Congressional House Republican Congressional Committee has vowed to sue us if we do it, because there's nothing that the Republican Party establishment hates more than true constitutional conservative Republicans. Well, I have as a guest on the show today a fellow who ticks all the boxes for being hated by the power structure. He stood up against his school board trying to protect kids against pornography. He went to the rally on January 6th in D.C. and had information about the truth. And now, God forbid, he's standing up against the rhinos in our own party and getting persecuted for it. So welcome to the show, Mr. Terry Newsom.
Hey, Mark. How are you? I'm honored to be on the show with you. I really respect what you and your wife did. I watched that. And, you know, thank you very much for everything you've done for our country and our children.
Well, I appreciate it. Well, you know, it's hard to know where to start with you because, you know, as I always say to most of the people that are on this show, the more the media and the establishment hates you, the more you're on the mark. And So I think I'd like to start because we've had a lot of January 6th defendants on the program. I had Suni Duarte, Enrique Tarrio's mom on a couple of weeks ago talking about how her son's been persecuted. So tell us a little bit about your experiences on January 6th, how you happened to be there and what you saw and what you did.
Yeah, sure. Part of the reason why I went there was unrelated to you, but similar to what happened to you and your wife. If you remember, you know, the riots and all the craziness that happened. And then in November, December, before January 6th, you saw Antifa and BLM go and turn tables over, go into hotels, attack people. And I went down. So I should have went down. So I was in the middle of treatment for stage 3 melanoma cancer. January 5th, I was at University of Chicago on an IV for melanoma, for immunotherapy. And I had a retired sheriff buddy of mine who kept begging me. I'm like, I shouldn't go. And he's like, Tara, I'll drive. You could sleep, you know? And so even though we're 60 at the time, we're both, you know, well, I was in good shape. we wanted to go and see, you know, the rally and then try to protect people from having exactly what was going to happen to you and your wife if you didn't protect yourself, right? That's the only reason. I would have never went there for a, quote, fake insurrection. It wasn't a real insurrection. I didn't even know about going to the Capitol until, you know, so we went there for those two reasons. And so we Matter of fact, we got there at like 12:30 at night or something. By the time we got there, Antifa was threatening, you know, we were parking our car, and then they said they're going to break all the windows out of everyone's cars that was from out of state. And sure, we went to a different lot. But on January 7th, every single window in that parking lot was busted out. The people were coming to our hotel and stuff. They don't talk about stuff like that. So we went there, and it's kind of funny. We left the hotel about 6:30 the Marriott. And as we're walking there, and these three elderly ladies said, "Hey, can we walk with you guys?" And we're like, "Yeah, sure." She's like, you know, she put her hand out. She goes, "I feel so much safer." And it shouldn't be like that. You're right. I mean, and that's why I was down there. Right. It shouldn't be like that. Even when Trump was going to had this rally in Chicago here, my mom's 84. We were all Democrats, Italian-American, you know, Democrat union family, and not anymore. And my mother she caught the Trump bug. She wanted to go. And I said, "Mom," I go, "there's going to be problems there." You know, my cousin was there, and he was in the middle of it on CNN. You know, there's going to be problems. Sure enough, as a matter of fact, they broke out all the windows in the parking garage there, but they don't talk about that stuff. Yeah. So I went down there. You know, we left early, and we walked towards the Capitol. We ran into a couple of Antifa guys. I'd say subtly it's a little bit of, you know, we went towards them, and they tried to deny they were absolutely Antifa folks. And we just happened to be on the side, the west side, when all this ruckus started. And you saw some of the photos and stuff. You know, we were behind Ray Epps. Yeah, I have a very similar video that the one that was all over the news with Ray Epps, right? But I was a little distance and didn't know who Ray Epps was. But me and my cop buddy, we saw what he was doing. We saw him whispering. We saw that something didn't make sense. We were told Antifa or BLM would turn Trump hats backwards. The red Trump hats, so they could identify each other because they're from all over the country. And there was lots of them like that. This was when everything started. And we're like wondering, why is the guy whispering? And it's easy for someone to say after the fact that you knew he was something, right? So on January 11th, I have screenshots. And again, you might have seen those. I sent them to an investigative reporter, Ben Bradley from WGN. And I said, this guy was up to no good. I didn't know who he was. He doesn't look like Antifa. He's a liberal. I like him, but he's a liberal. You know, and he said, "Oh, Terry, yeah, it's easy for you to say that. Those are all Trump people." This was January 11th. I sent this to him. And then when it came out, remember the FBI list? I still have it. I sent him like, this is the guy, you know, still didn't know who the heck he was. And then he disappeared. And then it was, I don't know how many months later, he popped up and they said his name. And I sent it to him again. And I said, "Listen, you had the story before anybody else. If you would have believed me." Right. But he didn't want, even if he believed me, they don't want to report it. Right. And so it's not like I got the timestamp evidence. I'm like the guys. And I took other pictures of other individuals, that's including that one guy that when we were walking back, I think it was like 1:30. I was exhausted from the treatment. I had a knee replacement earlier that day. I told my buddy. So, you know, so we filmed all this craziness going on. We didn't hit anybody. We didn't go in. We didn't yell. Kind of was like, "Oh my God," you know, everything that was going on. And then like the last line there was the police officers between the bleachers, you know, for the inauguration. And I was, you know, I was maybe, I don't know, 30 feet back, just kind of filming. And there was a lady, older lady to my right, maybe 3-4 feet. And behind it, between us, there was a guy yelling, "Get up there, get up there. We need more troops. Get in there. Help," you know, for about 5 or 10 minutes while I'm waiting for my buddy. I'm standing there. And the lady looked towards my direction to call that guy out. And she goes, "Why don't you get your ass up there?" And I was thinking that in my head. So I pulled my mask down and I smiled at her to acknowledge, like, no fooling. That's what I was thinking. You know, I remember it clear as day. I smiled. So then when we were going backwards, you know, leaving the Capitol building. And then that's where I heard this guy yelling, "Freedom!" It was Jason Chansley, you know, walking by. And, you know, little did he know what he was walking into. And he was just chanting, "Freedom, freedom!" And then there's this guy in a megaphone. And his whole body was, you know, wrapped. He had a scarf on. He had a baseball hat wrapped around scarf, ear coverings, gloves. His baseball hat was brought down to here. And his megaphone was yelling towards the approaching Trump supporters, right? And he was yelling, "Take pictures, show the world, everyone." This is before, you know, people went in. "Take pictures, hurry up, show the world, show everyone." And this guy was, who goes to a rally like that? Totally hides your, we couldn't even see his hair color. And I think you saw the pictures, right? I mean, obviously Yeah, very suspicious.
Yeah.
And so he made sure we couldn't see, really see his eyes, his hair color, his gloves, everything. And then he's chanting in this megaphone towards the approaching people the whole time, trying to agitate those people. And sure enough, what happened with those photos, right? Take pictures, show the world. A lot of people went to jail because of, quote, those pictures. And I'm not anything. Nobody should have fought with police. I was there with a police officer, right? Nobody should fight with police officers. You know, you hear there was some occasions like I was filming and I start coughing because there was like gas and stuff. And I was like, I wasn't on the line there. I was like standing there kind of like in shock. And they were shooting at people and I could understand the fear the police officers had and stuff. And some people, like the one lady got pushed down the stairs and they got upset, you know. But still, you know, they shouldn't. The people that beat up and fought with the police officers shouldn't have done that. Again, my friends are police officers. I understand it's hard to explain because there's so much. People have frustration, anger, disappointment, you know, uncertainty, right? And this falls back on the rhinos, right? The Republicans. Maybe January 6th wouldn't have happened if they would have said they didn't have to say, "Hey, they cheated." They could have told us, "Listen. Something fishy went on. Something is going on. Something doesn't make sense. But to be certain, we're going to investigate this heavily. We're going to try to get to the bottom." They didn't say that, did they, Mark?
No. You know, and of course, you know what the powers that be, what the left, what the swamp wants is discord and disruption and animosity, pitting people against each other, because of course out of chaos comes tyranny. Is any doubt in your mind that the crowd is being egged on by government agents provocateur?
There's 100% that they were. So now when I say that, we get the left nuts listening to us. Oh, you know, so again, doesn't justify the fight, and they were agitating. My friend who was a cop was like, I knew him since I was 14. I couldn't even believe he became a cop, you know. And he was like all amped up. And the only reason we left, I was exhausted from the, if I didn't have my treatment on the 5th, I'd probably be in jail right now, you know, because I had to talk him out of it 3 times. I'm like, let's go. I even had to lay down on the grass on the way back to the hotel. If I wasn't in that state of mind, it's like this energy, you know what I mean? It's like that, they talk about that crowd mentality. And I was never in a situation like that. And my buddy was like a little animal. I'm like, come on, let's go, man. And I finally told, I said, I'm tired. And that's why we left. It's the only reason we left.
Yeah. You know, we've got a friend of the show who is recently got convicted. And what he did was he was up there filming his father, who's running for Congress in Arizona, filming a commercial in a sense for him. And they arrested him. They charged him. They told the grand jury that he was instrumental in organizing the, quote, insurrection, unquote. And that he was personally responsible for the death of Officer Brian Sisnick. They admit at the first day of trial that all that's just nonsense. They had no such evidence. But the judge announces that he's guilty before the trial starts. The jury takes 30 minutes to convict him. And then after he's convicted, the defense lawyers want to have the evidence against him, which they're never allowed to have, including the memory cards and the cameras that he used that day, because he was specifically filming the agents provocateur, people with distinguishing tattoos. That guy that you were just talking about with the megaphone urging people to go up the stairs. Well, guess what? The government announced that all those videos have been destroyed and the memory cards have been destroyed. That's the totalitarian nation we're living in these days.
Yeah, that's awful. Two last points on January 6th. And maybe, so I don't know if anyone told you, you know, there was well over 1 million people, but the news media said, well, Trump's his license was for 50,000. You know, there was well over 1 million people there, and they didn't have one single porta potty from anywhere, right? And like there were some girls with us, and, you know, ladies and stuff. And my friend's a cop. By the time we got over there by the food trucks, the police officers had their own little porta potties, right? And Rob said, "Hey, you know, he just retired. He showed us. He goes, hey, can I use the bathroom?" The cops wouldn't let him. You know, fellow police officers. And then another thing is that we got back to our hotel at the Marriott. And this is when I sat down, I'm watching Fox News. I'm like, oh my God, there's people in the Capitol, you know, because I got a video as we were walking, tons of sirens. I'm like, I'm like, something's going on. It got worse. And we didn't know they got into the Capitol, but we tried to order food from the Marriott. We tried to order food from restaurants, and I got the screenshot when Bowser shut down everything, right? You know, it was like our phones were chirping. I'm like, dude, I took a screenshot. So we tried to order Uber Eats and stuff, right? They weren't allowed to serve us food. So then I tried to order food from the hotel. And then they said no. So I went down to bitch with the manager, and he happened to be coming in. And I when I was walking off the elevator, I'm like, hey, we didn't eat. We're trying to order food. And he goes, that, you know, B word won't even let me open my kitchen. Inside the hotel, right? He goes, I got people that are working here all night that I'm supposed to feed. You know, they work the late shift, and she won't let us open our kitchen. If we open our kitchen, we're in trouble, he said.
So you got a million people in the street, no food, no bathrooms, and the government agents egging them on. Gee, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. And then I think I mentioned that, you know, all those people's, like when we were getting our car to leave in the morning, I remember there was an older couple from New York City with a Mercedes with their windows bashed out. They were in that parking lot. We asked them what parking lot they were in. And but they don't talk about that stuff, right? Just like the media guy told, they don't want to know the truth, right?
Yeah.
And one thing when I say on the shows is like, we have the Chinese media, right? And you're in China, you know it's controlled by the government, right? You know that. So you kind of like, okay, is this true or not? And I believe in my heart that the American media is more dangerous than the Chinese media. You know why? Because we got a bunch of jamokes all over the country that think it's a fair, independent media. Therefore, these fools listen to these people, right? And they think it's truth, and it's really being controlled by the Democrats, the deep state, right? So they listen to this garbage, and they think it's true. Therefore, to me, it's more dangerous because people think they're justified in their means and what they do in our battle, this cultural war.
Yeah, I think that number decreases. I think that number of people that believe in the media is decreasing every day, but you're right. That's the biggest problem. And I always say this, the worst stuff always happens when the Republicans are in charge because people don't place the same scrutiny on the Republicans as they do in the Democrats. They think they can trust them. And when you say the deep state and the Democrats, I include the majority of the Republican Party in that too, because nobody's really standing up against it right now, except just a handful of people that are constantly getting smeared. Well, let's switch gears a little bit, because one of the things that's we've been active in here and personally and also on the program is combating this attempt by the left to destroy the minds of our children through pornography and just polluting traditional family values. You've been an advocate against that, and you've paid the price, haven't you?
Yeah, that's why I've never been involved in politics, right? Never been involved in politics. When I found out about, you know, it happened like 2 years ago, two different with the forced masking. Then I found out, oh my God, there's porn in the school. It's like, I thought I would get Democrats, independents, Republican parents to come and support me. If you're Democrat still today, you're a moron. So, you know, they don't care. If you're a Republican now, they don't have the courage to stand up, because the left in Illinois, so I was surprised to find out you guys have super majorities. I didn't know that. We have super minorities. I'm sure you know from Illinois, right? We got decimated. Oh, yeah. You know, our Republicans are they're incompetent fools. They have no courage, right? So they don't even want to upset the left, right? So they'll take the scraps. So for instance, Senator Kern, my minority leader, his kid goes to my kid's school. I begged him for 2 years, can you stand up and speak out against the porn? The guy refuses to do it. You know, he first told me when I first got into this, he goes, oh, Tara, I can't get involved. If I say something, it becomes political and a distraction. I'm like, what are you talking about? They want porn and drag queens. We don't. It doesn't make sense to me. So I later find out the guy's worried telling senior Republicans that he doesn't want to be considered a radical parent. And then I started hitting that guy. When I say hitting him, I meant hitting him on the radio. The state police were here last night. They put the sheriff to come after me because I said I was going to pummel him on my radio show. And he said he's sending state police here. They came here. So when I say hit, the guy's 6'8", 280 pounds, 15 years younger than me. I wouldn't say that to a 5'2" senator. You know what I mean? But they're playing games. They're tied in. They're integrated with the left. This senator took $330,000 from teachers' unions, the Democrats. He took $30,000 from the Illinois Teachers Association. I looked them up, and they're against parents like us speaking out. They don't want to speak at board meetings, right? They're pro LGBTQ books. I'm not against gay kids. I say it every single time. But when you have teachers' unions saying that, that means they're pro porn, right? Because a gay child, it doesn't matter if you're gay or heterosexual, you don't have to show moral sex. And you can't sit here and tell me that a gay child doesn't feel included unless he sees a strap-on oral sex book, in it, or he'll feel like he's excluded. Mike, I tell him at the school board, I got boy-girl twins. My son should not learn how to receive oral sex. My daughter should learn how to give it from the school. So why are you telling me these gay kids are going to kill themselves unless they see that?
Yeah.
It's crazy. And they're doing this to divide our children from their parents and create a disruption. They're making them weaker, and that's what it's about. It's not just about, quote, porn.
Oh, no. Well, you know, the bottom line is in every totalitarian state, there's only one parent, and that's the state. And so the state has to separate the kids from their parents, make the kids the enforcers against their parents, and the parents to be evil, and only the government and the kids are in unison. And that's the game plan, whether it's a Hitler Youth, whether it's in Red China today,
I say the same thing. It's like Hitler Youth program. You know what kind of launched me into the media's eye was this board meeting we had, the book Genderqueer, right? I think you know everyone knows that one now, right? That's the most popular one. And I got the posters over here. We show them all the time. I blew them up into big posters, and I had guys hold them for me, right? And matter of fact, it's in the Sun Times. They put the full page, right? So I try to get, fathers don't speak up and support their wives, which is crazy. And they're scared, right? Because of their job, whatever. They're living in this community. I said, can you hold them up when I'm speaking on my 3 minutes? And they didn't come as Proud Boys. They didn't disrupt, the whole story in the Sun Times, because one of the moms was Antifa, one of the liberal moms, right? So these dads held these nasty posters up, and it threw them off because it was being filmed and streamed, right? So parents saw these pictures, and they got upset. So what does the school board do? They say no more posters allowed in the school, but they've been using posters forever. So I just went to my last school board. I waited off, 2 years. After I hit the melanoma cancer, I had a reoccurrence of stage 4 prostate cancer. So it has been a rough year for me. So I was, so I wasn't as active as I normally am. And so I went back to my first school board meeting a few months ago. So I couldn't bring my poster. So what I did was I on the back of my T-shirt, I put that BJ poster, and I talked to the school board, and they had the camera behind me, and these fools didn't know I hit the picture, that they didn't want me to show on a poster until I turned around, and they're like, they don't want people to see how bad and crazy they are. And what they try to say, that doesn't fit the definition of pornography because the author's intent isn't to stimulate or arouse. That's BS.
Total BS. And didn't your illustrious Governor Pritzker just sign a new law on that defines trying to eliminate pornography from schools as book burning and sanctioning the schools?
Yeah. So I was on the local stations. They reached out to me. So you had Pritzker and Giannulli. I call him BJ Prickster. BJ Prickster, not JB Prickster. And then Giannulli ass, they were on the news. You saw what happened to Giannulli ass with the Kennedy, right?
No.
So Senator Kennedy, who's awesome, he read right from that book, Genderqueer. Nasty stuff, man. And Giannulli is like freaked out. He's like, well, it's kind of weird coming from you. And he said, well, no, we don't want to push pornography. He said it on the Senate floor. And then the same week in my library, Sean Caston had a book banning roundtable. I went with my 84-year-old mother, a bunch of parents. I brought that big BJ poster. I sat right in front of his panel, and I held it there. And he's like looking away. And WGN was there, and they were filming. And one of the specialists from the library or whatever, I had to look at a penis this whole 60 minutes. I'm like, and then Caston got mad. He's like, he's so in trouble. There's only one person that brought porn to this library, and it's him. And I yelled out. I'm like, I've been saying that for you 2 years, and you said it's not porn. It totally screwed him up. So it was written in school in some of the papers, local papers. Sean Caston admits it's porn in the school. But they've been saying for 2 years that it's not porn.
Only porn when a Republican.
So your point, so here's what Pritzker did. So like, say we all win the school board. You and my wife, we run to control the school board, right? We see these books. Oh, we want to get rid of this pornography. So we remove the books as the school board at the local level. Pritzker is going to say, now I'm going to keep your own tax money and not fund your school. He passed that law. It's the worst. And I don't know if you know this too. A year and a half ago, they had to put in my all the boys' bathrooms have tampon machines. Did you know that?
Yeah, see that. Oh, hey, we got to take a short break here. Can you hang on for a few more minutes?
Sure.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back with Terry Newsom after the break.
Get more Mark McCloskey at NewstalkSTL.com. More Mark McCloskey on Fire coming up on Newstalk STL.
He's so fine, he can be beat.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on NewstalkSTL.com. You're listening to Mark McCloskey on Fire on Newstalk STL.
Terry, thanks for coming back in after the break. In a couple of minutes, tell us what's happened to you since, what kind of consequences you have paid for lifting your head up against the left.
Yeah, so 2 years after January 6th, Vocal Parents, Southern Poverty Law Center, you know who they are, wrote a hit piece on me. Then these Antifa guys started tagging me. Then I was on Sedition Hunter site. You're probably familiar with that. It's Antifa site. Then they started tagging the FBI saying I tried to overthrow the government and all this crazy stuff. Went after my job. And my family and I were going December 17th to Charlie Kirk's TPUSA. My kids are VIP guests there. And we went with two 15-year-olds and my twins. Find out I'm on a terrorist watch list. It would take too long of these two. I was put on a domestic terrorist watch list, right? And then early January, I got a text message from this attorney saying, I'm an attorney for Matt Gaetz. I'd like to talk to you. I knew that was good news. I talked to him the next day. I said, how did you get my contact information? He goes, I think it was from Jim Jordan's office. So they sent a demand letter to Ray Mayorkas and Garland and calling them out. You know, am I on a list because I'm a school board parent? Am I on a list because I peacefully attended January 6th? They asked them questions. Are you keeping a list of parents? Are you keeping a list of everyone in D.C.? They never responded. They don't even tell the truth when they're on the stand. And they refuse. And if I was really a terrorist, right? They say, oh, this is what he did, X, Y, and Z. They're not responding because it's because of politics. And then also Congressman Troy Neils reached out to a reporter, gave me his number. I talked to him for 30 minutes. He's on the Transportation Committee. He sent them a letter. So all of a sudden, I went to CPAC. It was worse. They sent five agents to the gate. They undercover marshals and stuff harassed me before I get on. And then I didn't travel for a few months, and poof, I'm off the list. You know, I was, you know, so the letters helped me.
Unfortunately, Terry, I'm running out of time. I'm going to have to let you go. I appreciate it. But, you know, people like you are a tremendous risk, but not to freedom, but to the totalitarianists that wish to destroy our republic. Thanks for being on the show, and hopefully we'll have you on again real soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, that was Terry Newsom. Once again, stand up against the left, stand up for your rights, and you will be crushed in this free world of ours. As I always say, you know how free we are when everybody has to always remind us that we're the freest country on earth. The communist Chinese have got nothing on us, man. But listen to this. I've got almost no time, but the thing that pissed me off the most this week is how all the voices that were screaming and clamoring for the First Amendment and freedom of expression and freedom of speech and freedom of association and all those things we hold near and dear to our hearts, whether we're talking Lindsey Graham or Nikki Haley or people that we would consider to be their political opposites, like Kathy Hochul in New York, they're all clamoring the same thing now, and that's censorship. Everybody's saying, Nikki Haley says, we can't have anonymous posters anymore because if people say hateful things, they have to pay the price. Kathy Hochul, even though the courts have said it's unconstitutional for her to do so, is expanding internet surveillance in New York State, promising that anybody that says something which is hurtful, they'll pay the price. They won't get away free. Well, this is supposed to be a free country. We're supposed to have a system where you're allowed to say what you want. You're allowed to have political opinions. And ladies and gentlemen, if you really believe in freedom, if you really believe in the First Amendment, then what you have to really do is appreciate the fact that people have the right to say anything, even if you don't agree with it. Even if you believe that every Israelite is worth more than 1,000 other people, if somebody stands up and says, I think murder is murder, death is death, and war is bad, even if that means in your mind that they're an anti-Semite, they've got a right to say it. Just like you've got a right to say that the Palestinians are and the Hamas in Gaza are murdering animals, you've got a right to say it. Ladies and gentlemen, you can't pick and choose. You can't only be in favor of the views that you like. If you believe in liberty, if you believe in the First Amendment, you have to believe that it applies to everybody equally. And if you don't, you're just as bad as a swamp. And you can't be a Republican. And you can't be a conservative because it's got to go both ways.
Get more Mark McCloskey at NewsTalkSTL.com. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire on Newstalk STL. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on NewsTalkSTL.com.